I have a special guest today, folks. You're going to want to listen to this podcast. Do you like history about World War II? Are you interested in it? Well, you should be, because that was the greatest generation. My dad was in that generation. He served in the Navy. My guest today is Steve Snyder, who is past president of the 306 Bomb Group Historical Society. He's still on the board of directors. He's also on the board of the 8th Air Force Historical Society, and he is speaker and author of Shot Down, the true story of Pilot Howard Snyder, who is Steve's dad, was Steve's dad, and the crew of the B-17 Susan Ruth. I'm dedicating this podcast to Howard Snyder and the crew of the Susan Ruth B-17. We need to honor these men and their memories. Welcome, Steve Snyder, to Chatting with Betsy.
Well, thank you, Betsy. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you are here. I'm glad we connected. I saw your press release and the radio interview newsletter, and I said, I have got to get in touch with you. Your story touched my heart, and my husband, Matt, was a WW2 history fanatic, and my dad was in the Navy in World War II, and so was my father-in-law. And your dad was a pilot on the Susan Ruth, the B-17. I know why you wrote the book, but could you tell the audience why you wrote the book, and what would you like for them to take away from it?
Okay. Well, growing up, I knew the basics of my dad's World War II history. I knew he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. And he flew bombing missions over Europe. And in February of 1944, his plane was shot down by two German fighters, and he was missing in action for 7 months. But he evaded being captured by the Germans and eventually made it back to England. But it wasn't until I retired in 2009 from a 40-year career in sales and sales management that I finally had the time to really delve into my dad's war history in more detail. My parents had kept a lot of material from the war years, and I just wanted to go through that and organize it and learn more details. At that time, I had no intention whatsoever of writing a book. And there were two items that were really significant. One was a diary that my dad wrote while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down, which is absolutely riveting. It's in the book. And the other are all the letters that my dad wrote to my mother while he was stationed in England before his plane got shot down. And he was very candid in those letters. He talked about what bombing missions were like, what life was like on the air base, what life was like in England and London at the time, escapades of him and his crew. And I just became fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew, and it became my passion. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. I went on the internet and spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents. I went on a quest to find relatives of all my dad's crew, a B-17 out of 10-man crew, to find out what information they could give to me, started going to World War II reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, 3 years into my research, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling that it needed to be told. People needed to know about it. So I decided to write a book.
That, I agree. People need to know about these brave young men. And I want to put it in perspective for the young generation. There was no internet. So these men went to war and didn't see their loved ones for 4 years till the war was over. They had limited letters. They were censored. There was no FaceTiming. There were probably not many phone calls, I would imagine. And so your mom, she had to be quite a strong woman. There, her husband leaves. She already has a child. And your dad was missing in action. She must have been very frantic at that time.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. In fact, my other sister, Nancy, was born while my dad was missing in action. So there she was back in California with a one-year-old little girl, an infant girl, never knowing that she'd see her husband again. And like you said, you know, there was no communication except for writing letters back then. You know, telephone service was not available overseas between, you know, the common people. There was no internet. There was no television. You know, there was nothing.
Right.
And so they could only communicate through letters, which, you know, was kind of sporadic. You might not get any letters for, you know, several days, and then maybe get five letters in one day. So it was very hit and miss. So it was a very lonely time, both for the loved ones back home and for the men who were in service overseas.
Yes. And I can't even imagine going overseas for 4 years, and if you were married and had children, and depending on what ages they were, you missed those 4 years of your child's life.
Oh, yes. So, and that was very tough for the guys that returned, because and that was a big adjustment for my dad, and because he comes back and there's these two little girls, and he's a complete stranger. They don't know him, so they have a hard time adjusting to this strange man that suddenly in their lives. And my dad's coming back from combat, you know, the stress and the strain from that. And then, you know, he has to try to deal with the little temper tantrums of these little kids. So that was a big adjustment for families.
Yes, and then back then, post-traumatic stress was not recognized or treated like it is today.
Not at
all. They just, you know, it was called battle fatigue, but they just, you know, it was frowned upon if somebody went for help. So they just sucked it up.
Yep.
That's what they did. My dad, he didn't talk much about the war at all, except for when I was reading the book, The Flag of Our Fathers, and I had asked him, you know, some questions, and he told me that his ship was kamikaze twice, that he will never forget the smell of burnt flesh and seeing body parts and blood all over the place. It's quite, I can only imagine you do not come back the same person as when you left.
Not at all.
That's for sure.
Not at all.
So the men on your father's plane, were they captured? Were they killed?
Well,
in a plane crash?
Something happened to each guy, and the book's just not about my dad. Well, let me back up again. A minute. The first half of the book builds up to the day that the plane was shot down. And then the second half of the book is all about what happened afterwards. And it's not just about my dad, but it goes into detail about what happened to each man on the crew. And I'm also about all the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help them. Five of the 10-man crew came home, but five did not. A couple of the men were killed in the plane when it was attacked by the German fighters. The other eight men bailed out successfully. But different things happened to them. Three of them became prisoners of war. Three of them evaded capture for a couple months, but were captured by the Germans and killed. Two of the crew evaded capture, my dad being one. After my dad bailed out, he parachuted out. He came down in some trees right at the French-Belgian border, and his parachute got hung up in the branches, and he was dangling 20 feet off the ground and couldn't get down. But fortunately for him, a couple of young Belgian men, Henri Franken and Raymond Dervin, came to his rescue before the Germans got there, and they helped him down from the tree, and then they took him to the Durvan farmhouse that night, but he only stayed there one night because it was too dangerous because of German patrols combing the area looking for him. So the next night, a Belgium customs officer, Paul Tilquin, came on a tandem bicycle and took him to a safer location. And then after that, he was moved from place to place to place. How long he stayed in any given location depended on how brave the Belgian people were who lived there and how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there. He might spend one night, he might spend 6 weeks in a house or a farm. And the Belgian people who hid my dad down there, and for that, unbelievably brave people, they risked not only their lives, but the lives of their family and friends because if the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out about it, they'd be arrested, tortured, and either sent to a concentration camp or shot. And some of the people who helped my dad and other members of his crew did meet that fate. But it was a very stressful time for my dad as well. He was almost discovered on several occasions by the Germans, and those are described in the book. And normally when the underground came across downed Allied airmen, they tried to get him back to England through various escape routes, down through France, over the Pyrenees Mountains, into Spain, and then out through British-controlled Gibraltar. But something always went wrong trying to get my dad out. So he became quite frustrated, and finally he decided he got tired of hiding. Word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy on June 6th of 44. He was shot down on February 8th. And he decided to get back in the fight. Unlike most airmen, before my dad went into the Air Force, he was in the Army for a year in the infantry stationed up at Fort Lewis, Washington. So he knew how to fight on the ground, and he decided to join the French resistance. And so he joined a unit of what was called the Mackey, and he fought with them sabotaging German convoys for a couple months before finally U.S. armies came up through France after D-Day and liberated the area.
Wow, what a fascinating story. And I can only think that your dad probably suffered survivor's guilt. Did he ever talk about that? Like, why did he survive?
Not really. After he bailed out, he had no idea what happened to any of his crew members. He didn't even know that two of the crew were killed in the plane because a B-17 had a 10-man crew. There were four officers, the bombardier, the navigator, the first pilot, which was my dad, and then the co-pilot. And they were up in the front of the plane. They were the flight crew. And then behind them was the bomb bay. And then behind the bomb bay were gunners. So when the plane was hit and on fire, my dad didn't know what was going on but behind him. So when he bailed out and came down, he had no idea what happened to any member of his crew. He didn't learn about the other crew members until he got back to England.
I'm sure he was probably very, I want to say, shocked about, you know, what happened, because I'm sure your father was in shock when his plane, you know, when he had to bail out and he's stuck in the trees, not knowing what's going to happen. I just think sometimes people's brains go into this mode of survival. You know, they have to shut down part of it to survive, and then it catches up to them, you know, later on when everything is, I want to say, settled down or over. But what an incredible story, Steve. Your father was very brave. Brave man.
He was for sure. As you alluded to, his plane's attacked. It's on fire. He has to bail out. He comes down in a foreign country, has no idea where he is. As I said, he doesn't know what happened to his buddies on the crew. He can't communicate with the U.S. military, and he's being helped by complete strangers who really can't communicate because I get my dad couldn't speak French yet at that time. They couldn't speak English. He had a little English-French dictionary that he could refer to from his escape kit. And any of these people could be a collaborator and turn him over to the Gestapo. So it was a very stressful situation, you know, not knowing that, you know, he was on pins and needles every day because the Germans could break into these houses and arrest him, could send him for a prisoner of war camp. And unfortunately, I never really asked him the question, you know, on why he decided to join the French resistance. I know he felt like he had to get back into the fight because there's, you know, other servicemen that are fighting and dying. But the logical thing or the safest thing for him to do would have been just to stay hidden and hunker down and wait for the U.S. armies to come up to liberate the area. So to make the decision to join a unit of the French resistance, you know, here he is, an American, a complete outsider, joining a group of guerrilla fighters, basically, and risk his life fighting because he could die in these attacks on these convoys, or if the Germans captured him, he'd be shot on the spot as a terrorist. So that, I mean, took a tremendous amount of courage and bravery to make that decision. I think there's very, very, very few people that would have done that. I doubt if I would have.
I think this is what I'm coming to a conclusion to. Maybe your dad had faced, well, I'm tired of hiding. I could get killed hiding, or I could get killed fighting. And maybe he thought I'd rather get killed fighting than to hide. And maybe he felt the duty to fight against the Germans, you know, to help the French, because he was in a no-win situation, like either way.
Well, that's true.
You know, I have to ask you this, Steve. Are you Jewish by any chance?
No, I'm not.
Because the reason why I asked that is because maybe that's why your father wanted to fight, you know, to join the French resistance if he was Jewish, you know, to fight the Germans. And I know I've heard, you know, a lot of Jewish people who fought, if they were caught, they threw away their dog tags
so that
Germans wouldn't know that they were Jewish. But you can't tell by names anymore, you know, last names. I just think it's incredible. These men from the greatest generation were so incredibly brave. And I want to put it in perspective for the audience. You're talking about men, young men, out of high school. Some even lied about their age just to serve. Right out of high school, a lot of men going overseas, not seeing your family for 4 years. That is amazing to me. And your father got caught in a tree. You know, I've read about a lot of men who were shot down. You know, they were shot down. They were caught in the trees and shot by the Germans right on spot.
Yeah, that happened. You know? Yeah, as you say, though, because these guys, the gunners on these B-17s, these bombers, they typically were 18, 19 years old. The officers tended to be in their early 20s. And back then, the U.S. was a much different country. You know, today most people live in big cities. But back then, in the 40s, it was a very rural country. You know, most people lived out on farms. And a lot of these guys had never even been out of their hometown before. You know, just out of high school or maybe a year or two in college. And all of a sudden, they're halfway around the world fighting a war. They had never been away from home before. Back then, people knew very little about the world because, you know, you could listen to the radio or maybe a magazine, but it's not like today where you know what's happening every second that's going on in other parts of the world. So that was the first time away from home, never been away from their family, from their mother before. And all of a sudden, these guys are in England. with no supervision when they were on leave. You know, they could smoke now if they wanted to. They could drink if they wanted to. They could chase women if they wanted to. So that was quite an exciting time in their lives too. Although every time they went up on those bombers to fly missions over Europe, it could be their last. And over 26,000 men died in the 8th Air Force during World War II, which was more than the entire Marine Corps fighting in the Pacific. And another 28,000
wow.
men became prisoners of war after their planes were knocked out of the sky by either German fighters or German anti-aircraft fire. Being a combat crewman in the 8th Air Force was the most dangerous duty assignment in the United States military during World War II.
Wow, I did not know that. This is why I love having interesting guests like you on, Steve. I learn every time. And I want the audience to also, learn, because we have a large millennial audience. And I feel that, the World War II vets, there's not many of them left, because if they are alive, they're in their 90s, late 90s. My father, he died 9 years ago. He was 88. So, yeah, they're in their, I would say, mid to late 90s, if not 100. And I just feel like we need to honor these men. We need to remember our history. We can't rewrite history, folks. Whether we like the way it is or not, these men and their families sacrificed so much. I can't even imagine getting married and my husband going off to war, not knowing if I would ever see him again.
That's correct.
Or,
that's correct.
You know, to have children. My in-laws, they got married, and my father-in-law went off to finish his time. So my mother-in-law, they had the honeymoon and she didn't know she'd ever see him again. I just can't even imagine that. The sacrifice at home, and of course their lives were forever changed because they went through such an experience. Of course it's going to change their lives. My uncle, he was in the Army, and my grandmother said that Jack never—he didn't come back the same. He came back; he'd be punching walls in his room. Post-traumatic. I mean, how can you be normal after seeing your friends being blown up right in front of you? War is tragic, and you see horrible things happen. I just admire you, Steve, for writing this book and telling your father's story and the story of the B-17 Susan Ruth. I think it's an important story to share, and I thank you for sharing it on Chatting with Betsy and with my audience. Where can people purchase the book?
Well, most people get it on Amazon, but if someone wants a personally autographed hardcover copy, they can go to my website, which is stevesnyderauthor.com. Snyder is S-N-Y-D-E-R, stevesnyderauthor.com, and they can get a autographed book there. And on my website, there's a tremendous amount of information about World War II and the air war over Europe. There's links to veterans' interviews. There's links to archival footage. There's a great deal of historical information on my website about the air war over Europe and the 8th Air Force. And since writing the book, it really changed my life. I really have a second career now. I go all over the United States attending air shows, signing copies of my book, and do a lot of speaking and PowerPoint presentations to all sorts of groups to try to educate them about the air war over Europe and the sacrifice of those young men who served, fought, and died to preserve the freedoms that we enjoy today.
Yes, and that's a great second career, and I love your Facebook page. I highly recommend people to go on. What is the name of your Facebook page, Steve? Because my mind just went blank.
Well, I have. I actually have two Facebook pages. One is my personal page that I post a ton of stuff to. It's, you know, Steve Snyder. And then I also have an author page. My Facebook page, I think, is Steve Snyder. I should know that, B17 or something like that. And then my author page is Steve Snyder, author of A Shot Down. And I also have a YouTube channel, you know, Steve Snyder, author of Shot Down, that has a lot of footage of at different air shows where all the these World War II warbirds, B-17s, B-24s, fighters, and presentations that I've made, and interviews with veterans. So there's a lot of information on my YouTube channel. But it's become my passion, and as you said, there's not many of these veterans left. At the end of the war, there were 16 million World War II veterans, and there's less than 2% of those men still with us. So it's our duty to remember, you know, the younger generations today, it's hard for them to fathom not having, you know, they just take, you know, it's easy to take for granted all the freedoms we have today. If you go to Europe, to Belgium or the Netherlands or France and these countries that were occupied by the Nazis during World War II for 4 years and suffered under Nazi oppression, Nazi occupation, and who lost all their freedoms for years, I mean, they know what it's like not to have to have their freedoms taken away. We've never experienced that, you know, fortunately, in the U.S. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, if you don't learn from history, you're going to repeat it. We can't let that happen. So that's really why I do what I do, to educate the public and hopefully try to educate and inform younger generations.
Oh, I love what you do, Steve. I love your passion. I can hear it. I could, you know, feel it. And I just think it's wonderful.